This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. There was a time when much of American popular music revolved around the Sun. Sun Records, that is. Carl Perkins, Jerry Lee Lewis, Roy Orbison, Johnny Cash, and did we mention a young man named Presley? Sun was the epicenter of male rock and roll and country energy in the 1950s, and yet there were also women on the Sun label. That's Barbara Pittman singing Everlasting Love. Producer Hank Davis has gathered their songs in a new box set called Memphis Belles, The Women of Sun Records, put out by Bear Family Records. And Hank Davis joins us now from the studios of CJOY. Those initials give me a lot of joy in Guelph, Ontario. Mr. Davis, thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be here, Scott.
And why'd you dream up this project?
Well, this was really the missing piece of the puzzle. I mean, as you said, Sun Records was the epicenter of male-dominated rock and roll. It was filled with sexy men like Elvis and Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee, Carl Perkins, Roy Orbison, Charlie Rich. And this was a piece of the reissue industry that had never been dealt with before. And, you know, I was a kid growing up in New York in the 50s. I made a few records of my own. I learned to play the guitar. I fell in love with Sun Records. And I wanted to be Elvis and Johnny Cash and Carl Perkins all rolled up into one, but I never quite made it. And
that means you'd have a ducktail, wear blue suede shoes, and I'm trying to figure out what you would have looked like if you'd been a combination of that trio.
And lived in Folsom Prison, don't forget that.
he just visited there. We've had him on the show. He was never a prisoner there, but please.
But I found the way that I could sort of pay back the debt, because Sun Records was tremendously important to me as a kid. And the way I paid back the debt for the past 20 years or so was working as part of the Sun reissue industry. And I produced quite a few box sets and packages. But it always occurred to me that the women were getting short shrift, and it was about time to do something about that.
Hmm. Well, that'll introduce Barbara Pittman, who joins us now from the studios of member station WKNO in Memphis. Ms. Pittman, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Scott. I'm glad to be here.
You like hearing yourself after all these years?
Oh, well, I've heard the records all along. You know, I go to Europe quite often, and I'm doing them all the time over there. So, you know, I have been hearing them.
Yeah. So, but you find you get a little bit more attention in Europe than you do in the United States right now?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they know more about me than I remember about myself, you know. Really, it's incredible.
Well, tell us about yourself, if you could. You are the first singer on this collection. Could you tell us the story about when you walked into Sun Records and how was it that you recorded the song I Need a Man?
Well, Elvis introduced me to Sam at the Eagle's Nest, and Sam said, come down.
Sam Phillips?
Sam Phillips, yes. And he said, come down and audition, you know, for the label, and I did, and evidently he didn't like what he heard. He told me to go out and learn how to sing and come back, you know.
Ooh.
And his secretary, Marion Keisler, told me to get another job, you know, don't let go of your day job or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I went out on the road with Lash LaRue and came back a year later with all this experience and singing a lot under my belt, and met up with Stanley Kessler, and we wrote this song, I Need a Man, and I signed a 4-year contract with Sam.
Well, I need a man, I need a man, I need a man to love, I need a man, I need a man, I need a man to hug, I need a man to love a man, I need a man to hug a man. Well, I need someone I can tell my troubles to. I'll call leap up in a Persian cap, and I can't.
How old were you when this recording was made?
Very, very young, early teens. I was a very young girl.
And what happened to that song?
I think I bought one and my mother bought one. I'm not sure. It wasn't a hit. I mean, it did nothing then, you know. But now it's sort of my signature song. Everybody in Europe knows me. Sam's taste was not that of rock and roll or blues. It was more, marching band and Doris Day and the Miller Sisters and Sweet Little Voice type things. I don't know why he kept me around as long as he did.
I want to ask you about just literally a heart-piercing version I've heard you do on this collection of the song Cold, Cold Heart.
Oh, this is my favorite.
I've tried so hard, my dear, to show that you're my every dream. Yet you're afraid each thing I do is just some evil scheme. A memory from your lonesome past keeps us so far apart. Why can't I free your doubtful mind and melt your cold, cold heart?
That is such a brilliant and simple and crystalline version. It's just terrific.
Thank you. I think that's the best thing I did on the label. I'm getting goosebumps now listening to it. Now, Bill Justice engineered that, and he came out of the studio crying after we finished that. I actually was going to go on tour with Elvis with this tune. He loved it so much. He was so crazy about it. He would never record this tune. He was afraid of it. He said he couldn't sing it. But he just loved the way I did it. And I'd be darned if he didn't get drafted and he had to cancel the tour.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, but I was there, so, you know, at least it's part of my history.
Yeah. You know, I want to introduce someone else into this conversation now. All right, let me tell everyone who's listening to us to stop and listen to the 13-year-old Mary Johnson nail this song, River of No Return.
Sometimes it's peaceful and sometimes wild and free. Love is a traveler on the river of no return. Swept on forever to be lost in a stormy sea.
Now, Hank Davis, let me bring you in from Guelph, Ontario. I heard this the first time in my office, and I'm thinking, that's the record you play for Patti Page to say, this is how it's done. So why didn't somebody go to Sam Phillips that day and say, Sam, you got to hear this track? I do believe we can make $1 million off this girl.
Well, let me tell you what it was like to discover that record. First of all, it appears in a tape box that hadn't been opened in well over 45 years. And I listened to that, and I couldn't imagine what the woman who sang that was like. I thought she might be in her 40s. I didn't think she would be 13. And there were no clues at all about who Mary Johnson was. And you have to understand that back then, anybody could walk in, pay their $3 or their $5, and walk home with a homemade recording. And that's really all Mary and her parents did that day. And obviously, the engineer who recorded it, instead of recycling that tape, which was customary, you know, they would record it, put it on tape, and then cut a disc with it, and then recycle the tape for the next customer. But obviously, he heard something in Mary's voice, and he saved that tape. Now, whether he ever played it for Sam is anybody's guess, but 45 years later, that tape still sat in the Sun vaults, buried under a lot of other tapes, which were buried under a lot of dust. And to make a discovery like that, and then to find out who Mary Elizabeth Johnson is, was just absolutely a colossal experience. I mean, if you have a collection of pop records at home from the last 30 or 40 years, you have a lot of records with this woman on them, and she's anonymous. She's an anonymous background voice. And what you have here is the very first time she recorded anything.
I lost my love on the river.
And why in this age of the internet and search services and private investigators, why would someone who would have the personal profile to make a record, how can someone like that sort of disappear into the ether?
Well, the answer is pretty simple, Scott. It's a lot easier to track down men than it is women. Women change their names. And, you know, they either change their names professionally or they get married, and it's just tough to find them. And we're not talking about finding somebody who's made a record 5 years ago.
Yeah. Well, we're privileged, really, to be joined by another Memphis Belle, if you please, although she's in Biloxi.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara Thomas joins us now. Barbara Thomas Sullum. How are you? Nice talking to you.
Thank you, Scott. It's a hard last name. It's Sullum, and it's been like that for 40 years.
Okay. Well, good to talk to you. You're joining us, by the way, from Biloxi television station WLOX.
Correct.
You're certainly represented on this album, on this collection, aren't you?
Well, I got in touch with Hank, and it was just a pleasure speaking with him. And I said, hey, am I in this group? I recorded and Sam released them. And after listening to this conversation and Hank, I think I know why he did it, because Doris Day was my favorite singer. And maybe I tried to imitate. I mean, it's really shed a lot of light on this for me.
Let's listen to a bit, if we can, of Silly Blues. Now, who wrote this?
My brother, Ed.
Yeah, who?
He wrote all of our music. Let's see, Cliff Thomas with Ed and Barbara had a first release called I'm On My Way Home, and it did really well, and we were on American Bandstand with that record. Then we had another one called Sorry I Lied that was really better than I'm On My Way Home, and then we did another one called Tide Winds, and we went in to do the fourth one, and that's when Cliff lost his voice, and I did To Tell the Truth and Silly Blues, and I never like to sing slow music. I like to jump around and sing, and I guess that's why I like the stage better than standing still singing.
Hank Davis, I wonder if I can get you to tell us the story of Hannah Faye.
Oh, that's quite a story, Scott. Hannah Faye was really a regional star when she was just a kid in the mid-50s. And by the time she was 15, she was on television every day. She had made a couple of records for a small Mississippi label. And in 1957, she went up to Sun and recorded two really wonderful sides that were withheld from release at the last minute for reasons having nothing to do with the quality of the music.
Let's interrupt for just a moment to listen to her song, The Miracle of You. So, Hank, what happened then?
By 1960, Hannah had just about given up her musical career, and she got married and raised a family. And for a long time, probably, well, over 40 years, she just put all the music behind her. And then about a year ago, she started trying to reconnect with her musical past. And she hit an absolute brick wall wherever she tried. She went to the TV station where she used to appear, but of course there was no record of any of the shows she had done. It was pre-videotape, not even kinescopes. She tried to find her 45s, and they were on a tiny label, and they didn't exist. And I think she probably began to wonder if she had imagined the whole thing. And we had hit a brick wall also. We had just about given up. And we made a last-ditch effort. Cat Bergeron wrote a column in the Mississippi Sun-Herald, basically saying, Hannah Faye, where are you? And a long-lost cousin of Hannah's saw the column and called her up, and the search was over.
Let me put it this way. Did she have the kind of detailed recall that you have, Hank?
Absolutely not. Hannah was a child when these things were happening, and basically adults were making these things happen around her. Hannah barely remembered having recorded the sides at Sun. I mean, it wasn't a question of asking her who played bass on the record. It was a question of saying, do you remember going to Memphis? And even that was hazy. And the other side of that record was a blues, which she had no recollection of ever having sung, which was amazing to me. You know, it's another thing that just listening to Hannah's records really puts me in touch with is how many of the women on this project were very, very young when they recorded.
You know, in this spirit, we'd like to kind of round things out by ending with a singer whose name is known to archivists because she did record for Sun. But at least as we understand it so far, unless we're contradicted today, people can't seem to find her. Let's introduce a cut by Mickey Wilcox.
I'm willing and waiting to love only you, wanting you near me forever will do. I'm longing to hold you
Davis, what do we know about Mickey Wilcox?
We don't know a whole lot. We know that she left a demo tape with about a dozen surprisingly late-night smoky jazz tunes on it. Mm-hmm. And then she had one single session where she recorded that and The Flip Side, which were both in a style which led people to assume she was a black singer for quite a few years, and she isn't. Yeah. We still have no idea where she's from. Her age appears, I'd say, early 20s, which puts her certainly in range. And she is not the only singer on this set. There are nearly 40 women whose work I included in this box set. And I'd say of the ones who are still alive, we have about a 75% hit rate in terms of finding them and being able to talk with them and get them copies of the music and things like that. But Mickey Wilcox is one of the ones who has just disappeared into the ether.
Our love is here too.
I want to thank everybody. Hank Davis in Guelph, Ontario, thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
Barbara Pittman in Memphis, thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
Barbara Thomas Salome in Biloxi, Mississippi.
Yes, thank you, Scott.
Thank you very much. And Mickey Wilcox, if you're listening, please call. Thanks very much, everyone. We've been talking about Memphis Belles, the Women of Sun Records, has just been released by Bear Family Records, and this is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.